Chapter 2. The future emperor had been impressed with the play. Genevieve knew that would please Detlef. Elsewhere at the party, there was heated debate about the merits of the strange history of Dr. Zeichill and Mr. Chaida. Mornan Tybalt, the thin-nosed chancellor, quietly expressed extreme disapproval, while Graf Rudiger had apparently yawned throughout and glumly didn't see what all the fuss was about. Two critics were on the point of blows, one proclaiming the piece an immortal masterpiece, the other reaching into the stable for his metaphors. Guglielmo Pentangeli, Detlef's business manager and former cellmate, was happy, predicting that whatever a person might think of Dr. Zeichill and Mr. Chaida, it would be impossible to venture out in society in the next year without having formed an opinion. And to form an opinion, it would be necessary to procure a ticket. Genevieve felt watched, as she had all evening, but no one talked to her about the play. That was to be expected. She was in a peculiar position, connected with Detlef and yet not with his work. Some might think it impolite to express an opinion to her or to solicit her own. She felt strange anyway, distanced from the play she'd seen, not quite able to connect it with the man whose bed she shared, if rarely using it at the same time he did, or else able to understand too well the sparks in Detlef that made him at once Dr. Zeichill and Mr. Chaida. Recently, Detlef had been darkening inside. In the reception room of the Varga Bruegel, invited guests were drinking and picking at the buffet. Felix was conducting a quartet in a suite of pieces from the play, and Guglielmo was doing his best to be courteous to von Unheimlich, who was describing at length an error in Reinhardt's Kislevite swordsmanship. A courtier Genevieve had met, whom she had once bled in a private suite at the Crescent Moon Tavern, complimented her on her dress, and she smiled back at him, able to remember his name but not his precise title. Even after nearly 700 years in and out of the courts of the known world, she was confused by etiquette. The players were still backstage, taking off makeup and costumes. Detlef would also be running through his notes to the other actors. For him, every performance was a dress rehearsal for an ideal, perfect rendition of the drama that might, by some miracle, eventually transpire, but which never actually came to pass. He said that as soon as he stopped being disappointed in his work, he'd give up. Not because he would have attained perfection, but because he would have lost his mind. The eating and drinking reminded Genevieve of her own need. Tonight, when the party was over, she'd tap Detlef. That would be the best way jointly to savour his triumph, to lick away the tiny scabs under his beardline and to sample his blood, still peppered with the excitement of the performance. She hoped he didn't drink to excess. Too much wine in the blood gave her a headache. "Genevieve," said Prince Luitpold, "your teeth." She felt them, sharp against her lower lip, and bowed her head. The enamel shrank, and her fangs slid back into their gum sheaths. "Sorry," she said. "Don't be," the prince said, almost laughing. "It's not your fault. It's your nature." Genevieve realised Mornan Tybalt, who had no love for her, was watching closely, as if he expected her to tear out the throat of the heir to the imperial crown and put her face into a gusher of royal blood. She had tasted royal blood, and it was no different from a goat herd's. Since the fall of the arch-lector Michael Hasselstein, Mornan Tybalt had been the emperor's closest adviser, and he was jealous of the position, afraid of anyone, no matter how insignificant or unlikely, who might win favour with the house of the second Wilhelm. Genevieve understood the ambitious chancellor was not a well-liked man, especially with those whose hero was the Graf Rudiger, the old guard of the aristocracy, the electors and the barons. Genevieve took people as she found them, but had been involved enough with the great and the good not to want to pick sides in any factional conflicts of the imperial court. Here's our genius, the prince said. Detlef made an entrance, transformed from the ragged monster of the play into an affable dandy, dressed as magnificently as the company costumier could manage, his embroidered doublet confining his stomach in a flattering manner. He bowed low to the prince and kissed the boy's ring. Luitpold had the decency to be embarrassed, and Tybalt looked as if he expected another assassination attempt. Of course, the reason Detlef and Genevieve were allowed such intimacy with the imperial presence was that at Castle Drachenfels they had thwarted such an attempt. If it were not for the play actor and the bloodsucker, the empire would now be ruled by a puppet of the great enchanter, and there would be a new dark age for all the races of the world. A darker age, rather. The prince complimented Detlef on the play, and the actor-playwright brushed aside the praise with extravagant modesty, simultaneously appearing humble, yet conveying how pleased he was to have his patron bestow approval. The other actors were arriving. Reinhardt, a bandage around his head where Detlef had struck too hard in the final fight, was flanked by his wife, Ilona, and the ingenue. Several artistically inclined gallants crowded around Eva, and Genevieve detected a slight moue of jealousy from Ilona. Prince Luitpold himself had asked if an introduction could be contrived to the young actress. Eva Savinian would have to be watched.
Ulrich, but that was a show,
Reinhardt said, as open as usual, rubbing his wound.
The trapdoor demon should be delighted.
Genevieve laughed at his joke. The trapdoor demon was a popular superstition in the Vargabroigel. Detlef was given wine and held his own court.
Je n'ai, my love, he said, kissing her cheek. You look wonderful.
She shivered a little in his embrace, unconvinced by his warmth. He was always playing a part. It was his nature.
It was a feast of horrors, Detlef, the prince said. I was never so frightened in my life. Well, maybe once.
Detlef, briefly serious, acknowledged the comment. Genevieve suppressed another shiver and realised it had passed around the room. She could see momentarily haunted faces in the cheerful company. Detlef, Luitpold, Reinhardt, Ilona, Felix. Those who'd been at the performance in Castle Drachenfels would always be apart from the rest of the world. Everyone had been changed, and Detlef most of all. They all felt unseen eyes gazing down on them.
We've had too many horrors in Altdorf, Tybalt commented,
a mutilated hand stroking his chin.
The business 5 years ago with Drachenfels, Conrad the Hero's little skirmish with our green-skinned friends, the beast murders, the riots stirred up by the revolutionist Klojowski, now this business with the Warhawk.
Several citizens had been slaughtered recently by a falconer who set a hunting bird on them. Captain Harold Kleindienst, reputedly the hardest copper in the city, had vowed to bring the murderer to justice, but the killer was still at liberty, striking down those who took his fancy.
It seems, the Chancellor continued, we are knee-deep in blood and cruelty. Why do you feel the need to add to our burden of nightmares?
Detlef was silent for a moment. Tybalt had asked a question many must have pondered during the evening. Genevieve didn't care for the man, but she admitted that just once he might have a point.
Well, Sirk,
Tybalt insisted, pressing his argument beyond politeness.
Why dwell on terrors?
The look came into Detlef's eyes that Genevieve had learned to recognise. The dark look that came whenever he remembered the fortress of Drachenfels. The Chaida look that eclipsed his Zeitkill face.
Chancellor, he said, what makes you think I have a choice?